Oh, no pressure there
Oh,
then.
no, not at all. No, just the devil.
Welcome, and this is Far Betterment. In this episode, I'm joined by my friend Liz. My wife and I met Liz in 2016. Our kids were in kindergarten together at the same school. So obviously at the same school, because if they were in different schools, then we would have never met Liz. Anyway, this is Liz and I having a conversation for Far Betterment. You know, my podcast.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. How was church?
It was good. It was good. Elijah likes going whenever grandma and grandpa go. So then it's kind of like I feel guilty if I send him and I don't go.
Oh, yeah, I would
so
too.
I have to get up and go too.
I would too.
So. Like, oh, I guess I probably can't stay in pajamas then. I probably better get dressed too and go.
Well, that's all right. You got a good kid, so.
Yeah,
he's a good
right.
kid.
Can't complain about that, I guess.
No, not at all. I want to go to church. No.
No, you can't go. We're gonna be lazy in pajamas all day.
Yes.
Heathen.
my grandma used to tell me if I didn't go to church when I was a kid, I would be staying home with the devil. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So, oh, no pressure there.
Oh,
then.
No, not at all. No, just the devil. You know, no big deal. In the closet, under the bed, like, yeah, that was her fear tactic when I was a kid. So if I didn't go to sleep,
you're Catholic, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That Catholic.
Oh man.
Pretty hardcore.
Catholic guilt is real.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know you said you might want to ask some questions. Do you have any questions for me or anything like that? Or just like hop in.
I mean, I don't have anything like off the top of my head, I guess. I mean, because you're from Colorado, and Robin is too, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I was born and raised there.
Okay. Yeah. Do you notice a lot of differences here compared to there?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Your normal, like, stereotypical Southern stuff, I guess. Like, a lot of it's true, I think, but a lot of it's not. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of differences. I think it's a lot more religious here. Colorado really isn't. Like, you don't see a lot of that in Colorado. You don't see people. There's no like church rush hour, but it's also a lot bigger city where we used to live.
Yeah.
So I think maybe that's just harder to notice.
Yeah. I wondered if that was based on the area or just based on how things are changing through the years.
Yeah.
'Cause it's the same thing when I was growing up. I mean, people went to church, but it wasn't something like you talked about on a regular mm-hmm. basis, like what church do you go to? And I mean, that was like it's kind of a status thing here. Oh, well, what church do you go to if you meet somebody new?
Yeah.
That's kind of, I mean, that wasn't ever something we talked about when I was a kid or a teenager. I mean, but I don't know. It might be more like that now because I mean, but maybe not. I don't have any idea.
Yeah, and that's a good point, though. That's a good point. Yeah, I don't know. It really is big out here. But I mean, I don't know. I
guess it is.
We kind of expected that. But I remember when I was a kid just going to church, and it was, you know, very, like a very individual thing. Like, you just go and you go home, and then that was it. But out here, yeah, it's like a full day of, well, not for everybody, obviously, but it's like a full event, kind of. It's like this big thing, this big to-do. But I don't know. For the most part, I mean, you know, the Southern hospitality is real, I think, and people can be very, very, like, polite. I mean, manners out here are much more important than they were in Colorado. You know, people are polite, but just as polite as they have to be. We're out here, it's really important, and people really raise their kids to be, you know, very polite. Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, ma'am. You know, they call Robin Miss Robin and me Mr. Andrew, and that was kind of weird when we got here. We weren't used to that, but
do you, Yeah. Do you push that on the kids then, like, to try to encourage them to talk that way?
Not to talk that way, but we do, you know, like the manners. Like, we do definitely push, you know, please, thank you, be appreciative, respect yeah. people, stuff like that. But we've never made them say, like, sir, ma'am, unless the, you know, the people they're with expect that.
Yeah. So I've had that problem with Elijah. I remember him kind of getting in trouble at school because mm-hmm. he would say yes or no or whatever. And they'd say, like, excuse me. Then they'd have to say, yes, ma'am. You know, and I thought, well, this isn't really fair to him because I'm not making him do this at home.
Yeah.
So this isn't natural for him.
Yeah.
So if he's getting in trouble, you know, or talking to older people, I'd try to encourage him to call them Mr. or Miss, you know, whatever their name is, versus just by that name. But again, it's not a natural thing because that's not the way I talk.
Yeah.
Because that's not how I was raised.
Yeah. Me either. I mean, so it was kind of, well, it's different, you know, but I guess Asher is the kind of kid where if he thinks he's going to get in trouble for something, he just won't even talk. So I think that's why he was so quiet at school. Was, you know, he didn't want to say the wrong thing, so he just didn't say anything.
Yeah. Elijah doesn't have a problem saying things, whether they're right or wrong. He just likes to talk and hear his voice. He has to be the star of every show.
Oh, well, maybe he's got to be on the apple in the tree with us sometime.
Oh, I'm sure he would love it. Mm-hmm. He would probably never stop talking.
Well, he's perfect then. Perfect for podcasting.
Oh, yeah.
You do have a little comedian over there, though. He's hilarious.
That kid. Oh, my gosh. We went ziplining yesterday.
Oh, that's awesome.
At, like, this huge place down in Fayetteville. So the longest one was, like, 800 feet.
Wow.
So, I mean, it was, like, major ziplining. It was so much fun. And we were there with two other, like, I don't know, 20-something girls. And then we had our two guides who were both, like, 20-something girls. And this kid did not stop talking and flirting and dancing. And, like, he had comments for everything that happened. They were all just dying laughing at him because he just can't get enough of it. He just loves being the center of attention.
Oh, yeah. I think that's I don't know. I like that quality, though. I think that's a cool quality to have when you're so natural like that. Because he is. He's like a real natural people person, that kid.
Like, yeah, he does really good. But his issue is he doesn't ever know how to shut it off. So he is constantly, I'm constantly getting letters home from the teacher saying he cannot be quiet. And we've got to figure out a way to make him be quiet. I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. Put him by himself. I don't know how to make that stop. that's probably one of the hardest things as a parent, to figure out how to encourage them to be themselves, but that they need to conform some to society and do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah,
which is just not something that's easily taught.
He's like in a transition kind of age right now too, so that must be really tough to even be able to explain that to him. He's like, but why? Yeah. You know, I love talking.
Yeah. Everybody thinks that it's really cute and everybody thinks
and
it's
hilarious.
Fun. It's like, well, your teacher doesn't. Your teacher doesn't think it's very funny.
Oh. Well.
And he says, well, my teacher is the devil. And I says, no, honey, she's not the devil. It's not very nice. Let's not talk like that.
Well, I don't know. The devil's everywhere from what I was told. So
apparently,
you never know. Yeah, you never know. You have no idea. Could be.
I'm not there. I can't say. There's no telling.
Maybe you'll have to go do a day in class with him to make sure.
Yeah, get like one of those nanny cams and hook it up to his backpack and see what's really happening in there.
Yeah.
Great idea.
Never know. Could be the devil.
Could be.
You watch
orange sprout out whenever all the parents leave.
Yeah. Doing like witchcraft and stuff.
Oh my gosh.
Sacrificing animals.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
I'm so sorry, buddy. I should have listened to you.
Yeah. She really is. Oh. Okay. Let's see. I did write some questions down. But this, I always like it to go like this, just like supernatural. And because, you know, they're my friends. Everybody's my friend. So it's great.
That's nice. Yeah.
So I guess why don't you talk about a little bit, you know, where you were born and your parents and your upbringing and stuff like that.
Okay. Well, I was born in Illinois, the Quad Cities. So it was like right on the border of Illinois, Iowa. So we kind of bounced back and forth through the years, depending on, you know, where we lived, on which cross of the line we were at.
Mm-hmm.
I had a sister. We grew up, you know, in like a cute little neighborhood where it was safe to go out and ride bikes when you're little without worrying about somebody taking you or murdering you or whatever, like you always hear about now.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there's a huge field we used to all go play kickball at. Like all the neighbor kids would all come around, you know, before calling people and texting. You just would yell at each other through the windows and ride your bike down and play. And that was awesome. And it's sad that that's not how things go anymore.
Yeah.
That you can't let your kids do that kind of stuff anymore. But it was pretty good. I don't know, it was safe. I had lots of friends. My dad was in the military, so I can remember him being gone for long periods of time and then coming back with a whole bunch of MREs for us. And that was like gold. It felt like the best thing in the world. Then, of course, later on in life, when I was in the military and I had to eat MREs, they were terrible and awful. And I can't imagine what I was thinking at 7 and 8 years old, thinking that they were amazing.
Were they better when you were a kid or worse?
Oh, no, they were definitely worse when I was a kid.
Oh,
but
really?
It was something new, you know, like the processed cheese whiz almost in a bag and these terrible, nasty stale crackers. But it was our gift when he came home.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, yay. It's so exciting. My mom sewed, and she still does. That's what she did for a living when I was a kid. And so she used to keep a lot of the kids from the neighborhood because she worked at home. So after school and before school and sometimes on weekends, she would have a lot of my friends and stuff like that over because she'd babysit us. I mean, that's kind of it. It was a pretty basic childhood. You know, I was a good kid. I talked too much too. I can remember that in school, getting in trouble a lot for talking too much in class. So he comes by that naturally. my parents got divorced when I was, I think, in junior high. And that was a big trauma, I guess you can say, in my life. I made a lot of bad decisions after that. I don't really know if it was so much because of the divorce versus just the changes everybody goes through, you know, when you're hitting like junior high.
Mm-hmm.
And I went from knowing everybody in my school to now there was this whole new group of kids that came from the area that were all pushed together in one junior high and trying to figure out, you know, where you fit in. And all of a sudden having people who teased you that you, you know, never had anybody tease you before. And then trying to, I know, I was a big people pleaser and I couldn't understand why somebody wouldn't like me. So then going out of my way to get them to be friends with me and then ending up, you know, smoking cigarettes and sneaking out of school and, you know, stuff like that in order to be able to fit in with this new group that maybe didn't really like me and called me a goody two shoes or whatever.
Yeah.
Which then, of course, just kept taking you down, you know, a bad path because of the divorce. There wasn't a lot of supervision because everybody was trying to deal with all of that. So I think it all just kind of played into each other, you know, going through the change of peer pressure and trying to figure out who you are and then not having anybody to really watch you to make sure you're making good decisions just kind of took me down a bad path. My dad had an affair with a really, really young woman. She was only like 19, so that was a lot of scandal involved with that and, you know, how we kind of dealt with dealing with having this new person in our family who we knew was responsible for breaking up our family was a lot.
Yeah. So they ended
up...
But
we all got through it.
They ended up staying together?
They stayed together and they got married. They were together for probably like a year and a half and then she ended up cheating on him and leaving him for another person. And that's, you know, a whole new story.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
all went down.
Well, sure.
Yeah. So, you know, things were kind of rocky through high school. I went to several different high schools, kind of bouncing back and forth between parents. You know, mom would piss you off, so you'd go live with dad for a while. And then dad would say he can't handle you anymore and send you back to with mom. And now I'm even more out of control. So now mom definitely can't handle it. So, you know, a lot of back and forth there. I got in quite a bit of trouble. I spent several stints in juvenile hall, and I did a couple different things where I was gone for like a year at a like group home and things like that, my parents couldn't handle me anymore. So went through a lot before finally calming down slightly to where I could go back home and finish high school.
What do you think, what do you think ultimately was the thing that calmed you down?
I don't know that anything necessarily calmed me down, but I realized that I didn't want to be incarcerated.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I was always pretty smart and a little bit manipulative to where I, you know, figured out pretty quickly how to figure out what I needed to say and what I needed to do, to be able to get out. And then once I got out, I knew that I didn't want to have to do that anymore. So I graduated, and then I decided to go into the military because I knew if I went to college, it was going to be downhill because then there would be no more supervision. And, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't have the best track record for making good decisions. So that's what I did. I went straight into the Marine Corps out of high school.
Do you?
And that worked out well.
Yeah. So that completely changed your life. The military.
Absolutely.
Did. Yeah. So mm-hmm. you would say that was a good experience for you.
Yeah, it was. It was, you know, grass is always greener. So I ended up getting out because I thought, no, I'm not, I don't want people telling me what to do anymore.
Okay.
But being in, you know, was finding like another family and making all of these great connections and people I still talk to now, you know, and feel close with and keep in contact with. That we've all been through a lot of the same experiences and can kind of relate. We've all got, you know, maybe something a little bit off upstairs.
Sure, yeah, we all do.
After being through what we've been through, that we can kind of, you know, relate to each other and know that we've been there and got through it and we're going to be okay. So that's something, you know, that I'll have forever.
So what was that experience like? What did you... What'd you take from it? And besides, you know, the family and stuff, what was the whole experience like?
Well, I mean, as far as just being in the discipline of it, you know, that was really kind of a first job that you have to go to every single day.
Okay.
You know, there was no calling out sick. There was no, you know, oh, I just don't like feel like going in today. So you had to go every single day. And you had your routine. They gave you such a strict routine of what you did every day. And I never had had that in my life. And it was something that I really needed in order to, you know, not have to make decisions for a while so that someone else could make them and teach me how to make good decisions.
Yeah.
You know, physical fitness. I was never overly active. You know, I did some sports and things like that, but that was... not anything like what you get in boot camp and then afterwards, you know, learning how to really run. And, you know, I was the kid in high school who we would walk the full mile when we had to do it and just get yelled at by the gym teacher. So that was a huge change. And it felt good in finding out that you can feel good doing those kind of things. You know, a sense of accomplishment. And having a job that you could really do well, you know. When you get a job that you can do and you know everything about it because they've given you all the training, then you can feel confident like, wow, I can do something and do it well and people depend on me to do it well. So that feels good too.
Were you ever deployed at all?
I was. I went to Iraq. I was in El Takadam. We were over there for 9 months.
Was that like, were you scared when you found out you're getting deployed?
No, I mean, because you're pretty gung-ho, you know, about whatever they tell you you're going to do. So, I mean, it was exciting.
Okay.
I was excited to be able to do it because I knew going in that that was something I was going to be doing. So when you finally find out you're going, it's kind of like, okay, here we go, you know, and you're excited. of course, your family's terrified, but you're just like, oh yeah, this is going to be awesome.
Yeah. Was it? Did you?
Well, when you first landed, I can remember when we first got there. So it was kind of an ordeal. You went to Kuwait first, and that was just kind of, you know, your first experience of, wow, this is different. But in Kuwait, they had, you know, little restaurants and a gym and all this nice stuff set up. So you just kind of thought that was what it was going to be like. But then we had to get on like a cargo plane to go to the next destination. And we had to fly in like in all black, so they didn't have any lights on so that they couldn't see us coming in, you know, so we wouldn't be a target. Mm-hmm. And it was bumpy and it was fast. And it was kind of like, oh my gosh, it's getting real. Like, oh my gosh.
Oh wow.
What's about to happen? And you land and they're like telling you to run and you have to go run. And it's just kind of like, this is insane chaos here. And then we were getting bombed. It seemed like shortly after that. And it's all kind of fuzzy, but I remember like hiding behind big barricades and hearing explosions and stuff. And at that point, like really hitting me like, oh my gosh, this is really happening right now.
Yeah.
And that went on, you know, for a little while at the beginning, but after a while, like anything else, you acclimate to it. And so then if we would get bombed, it was more just like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, I have got stuff to do. I don't have time for this right now, which is, you know what I mean? Like, it sounds bizarre, but like at that time, it's like, ah. Now I gotta go get all of my gear on again. It's 150 degrees outside. I gotta go check in with my post. And it's like, I was in the middle of a shower or whatever.
Yeah.
You are inconveniencing me. But we were really lucky. Nobody in my unit got severely injured. We had a few minor injuries, but nothing. We didn't lose anybody. So I had a better experience than a lot of people did.
Yeah. Well, that kind of stuff's terrible either way, but yeah, I mean, that's good.
Yeah. I had been training while we were over there for mortuary affairs. So I was somebody who was selected to go out if there was like a big explosion and pick up body parts.
Oh, geez.
And we had to go through this whole class of like how you put them in bags and labeling and everything like that. And I can remember looking at the people that were teaching us this, and they all were gray and had like these dead eyes. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's going to be me. I'm going to look like that when this is all over. And that was super scary for me to grasp that. And seeing friends that I knew from back home over there that were doing more dangerous jobs, like your infantry and your MPs, and seeing them come into where we were and having that same look about them, and they wouldn't even recognize you when you talk to them, you know, because we're kind of having a good time and it's not really anything terrible happening. And they would just kind of look at you with this ghost expression. And that was awful to see that.
Would you say that was,
you know, think.
Would you say that was, that made your experience a lot different maybe than somebody else having to, or not having, you know, so many bad things happen to you?
Absolutely. You know, we went out on patrols and we got in firefights and things like that. But again, I was never in a vehicle that exploded.
Yeah.
I never had to watch a friend explode. I was never in like a street combat, you know, where I have a lot of people that were, you know, that actually visually saw themselves shooting people. You know, we would shoot, but we were shooting off into the distance.
Yeah.
So if you hit somebody, you would never know, you know, it's pitch black outside and there's 50 of you all shooting in one direction.
Yeah.
So I've never had to carry that guilt with me or fear or, you know, that I'm sure a lot of other people did have to deal with while they were over there.
Yeah. So that was,
so I know that's definitely a blessing.
That was 9 months of that, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's...
Yep.
So you were only deployed the one time and you didn't have to... Was that at the end of your service or
did you... No, it was like in the middle, okay. I suppose. Like, and then I had one more year when I got back, and then I got out.
Okay. So you weren't interested in being like career military. You just kind of need the structure.
When I first went in, I thought for sure that I would do it forever.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, it was kind of grass is always greener. I thought, I don't want to keep doing this anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's got to be something else out there that I can do.
Yeah, you mentioned not wanting to be told what to do all the time and stuff like that. So
Yeah. Well, and, you know, again, other people, I had so many people that were getting out. So it just kind of seemed like the thing to do. So you made plans. I made plans with some of the people that were getting out at the same time. And we all ended up kind of hooking up together and traveling around.
Okay. So that's what you did after you got out. What did you talk about that a little bit?
Mm-hmm. After I got out, I went to South Carolina and stayed with a friend for a while in the effort to move to Florida. So I stayed there with him for a while. And then he was just kind of dragging his feet about going. So I ended up just talking to another friend who was already in Florida. And I moved down there and moved into a house with them and got a job down there. And then the kid who was in the service with me was someone who had went through a little bit more trauma, I think, than I had. And I had a lot of problems with him. He had stolen my checkbook and was writing himself checks with it. Just a lot of kind of off the wall stuff. Mm-hmm. So then I moved out of there. And then I hooked up with some people who lived in New York. And so then I traveled up to New York and I lived in Hell's Kitchen up there. And I lived there for about a year. Had a lot of good times there. I could have probably stayed there forever, but you kind of start to get burnt out on partying every day. Mm-hmm. So then I hooked up with another friend I was in the military with who lived in New Jersey, and I stayed there for a while and worked in their cafe, and that was really fun. Where were they from? Somewhere in South America. I know that's terrible. I can't think of it right now off the top of my head. So that was really fun to live with them and experience their culture. Every night after we got off work, we'd go back to their house, and they would get, like, big jugs of the Carl Rossi wine. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Yeah, and then they would, like, pour everybody, like, little shots of it. We had, like, one, like, family glass, and they'd pour, like, a shot for someone, and they'd drink it, and then pour, and it kept going around the circle. And then that's what we would do all night. They would talk in Spanish and play music, and we'd dance, and we'd drink shots of wine, and that was the nightly routine. It was really fun. I had a good time.
That actually sounds really great.
It was amazing. And they, you know, they had this awesome Italian cafe and bakery, and that was, it was really cool. I got to eat a lot of different food that I never had before. And, you know, I just waitressed and had fun. And then I ended up moving in with my dad and his third wife, who he's still married to now.
Okay.
They live down in Georgia, and she said that she could get me a job at a place that she worked at, and they wanted me to come down there. So I did. I packed everything up and headed down to Georgia. And I stayed and worked there for, like, I think 3 years before I met Elijah's dad.
Okay.
And me and him moved to Texas together. We were together for about a year. And then when I found out I was pregnant with Elijah, I said, you know, some things had to change because he wasn't necessarily a great person. Not that I was amazing either, but I thought with a baby, you know, that has to be number one. And he didn't have any desire to make changes. So I took off and came to North Carolina where my mom lived.
Okay.
And I've been here ever since.
So what brought your mom out here?
Her husband had a job opportunity out here, so they moved out here. They've been here, I think, 3 or 4 years when I moved here.
Okay. So after the military, though, I imagine your relationship with your parents probably improved quite a bit.
Not really, honestly.
Okay.
I think we probably talked a lot more when I was in the military because I didn't have a whole lot else to do, as mm-hmm. sad as that sounds, you know, so writing letters and stuff like that kind of, and I knew how worried they were.
Yeah.
So, you know, I tried to get in touch with them, you know, a few times a week just so that they would know I was okay. But then once I got out, it was just kind of like the party started all over again.
Okay.
The structure was gone and I'd had enough structure and I kind of let loose.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's natural.
Well, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
So it really wasn't until I found out I was having my son that I said, okay, it's time to be a grown-up now. Enough's enough.
Yeah.
So he's definitely been the life-changing event in my life.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Were your parents, so you said they were worried. Was your dad one of those dads that was, like, happy you were going to the military as a military guy, or was he, like, against it?
He's not really a worrying type of person.
Okay.
He thought I was stupid for going into the Marine Corps. He thought I should have gone into the Air Force or something else. But I said, if I'm going in, I'm going in. Go big or go home.
What branch was he in?
He was in the National Guard and the Army. And then he ended up going to the Air Force National Guard.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
We have that big base in Colorado. So we used to go down there a lot. I loved planes when I was a kid. It's like my favorite thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I always wanted to join the Air Force, but I went to this like, I don't know, they used to have these camps or whatever in the middle of the summer when I lived in Aurora, and we would go down there to Buckley Air Force Base, and they'd have like simulators. It was like this weird thing where it was for kids. This is kind of weird, actually, looking back on it. But they would have these flight simulators, and I used to love it. And I would go fly the flight simulators, and I was really good at it. And then the guy said, "You wear glasses. You could never do this." And that was it for me. Yeah, I was like, okay, well.
That's terrible.
I wanted to be a priest after that. Isn't that weird? Can you imagine me being a priest?
That is weird. Well, especially with, you know, the whole devil stuff. My gosh, I think that would scare you off of religion.
Oh, no. I wanted to be a priest so bad when I was a kid. It was the weirdest thing. I can't imagine why. Do you remember, like, what you wanted to be when you were a kid? Or, you know, before the military and stuff, obviously?
I mean, like, as a little kid, I would imagine it's probably what all little girls dream about, being, like, a movie star. Or a supermodel or an actress. I think I was a movie star for like 5 years in a row as a little girl.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I really wanted to be famous and beautiful, and that was my goal.
Oh, that's adorable.
Yeah. I don't know. Yep. Just kind of cute. I don't know. I don't, you know, and then I went through a few different phases after that, I guess. I wanted to do makeup design, like in Hollywood. I guess I kind of gave up on the famous parts, but then I still thought I really wanted to do something with famous people, you know, whether it was doing the makeup or doing the fashion or doing something glamorous.
Did you ever tell your parents?
I don't know at what point. Yeah, I mean, they knew, and I don't know at what point, if maybe my parents told me or if I heard it somewhere that, you know, you have to make money and you can't pick these kind of jobs because you won't succeed.
Okay.
Which, you know, and people tell you, don't ever tell your kids that now. But at some point that was said, that you know, you have to pick something realistic. These can be hobbies, but they can't be your life.
Okay. How'd that affect you?
And so then you're kind of, well, I mean, then you're kind of at a loss. Well, then I don't know what I'm going to do. And once you don't know what you want to do, then you kind of lose purpose. You know, you don't have anything to work for. You don't have anything to shoot for because what you want to do isn't going to happen. So then you kind of say, well, to hell with it. I'm going to do whatever I want then, I guess.
Yeah. So do you try to raise Elijah differently, or do you kind of try to go realistic with him also?
Well, I do probably a mixture of both. You know, if he tells me he wants to do something, I'll encourage him, but at the same time, I'm telling him everything he needs to do to make that happen.
Okay.
You know, if he tells me he wants to be a doctor, I'm like, that's awesome. You'd be great at that. You're going to have to do really well in school, and you're going to have to go to school for a long time. You know, and these are some of the things that you'll deal with as a doctor. You know, if you want to do this and, you know, you want to be Michael Phelps, that's fine, but you have to swim every day. You have to do really well at this. You know, you have to practice, practice, practice. And then a lot of times he's like, nah, yeah, I'm good. And then he'll move on from that. So I'm generally trying to encourage him that he can do whatever he wants, but also put out the realistic, okay, and this is totally great if this is what you want to do, but these are the steps you need to take to get there. Maybe he's too young for all that, but
he's...
I feel like if I would have broken in early, you know, then maybe it would have been a little easier transition.
I don't know. He's like, when he puts his mind to something, though, he does it. Like, we've always noticed
he
that
does,
about him.
He doesn't ever put his mind to anything very often. Most of his things
are
very fleeting.
Maybe that's a good thing, though. Maybe like, he's just hyper focused.
We've got a full band in this house now.
Well, I saw that.
We've got a drum set. He's got an electric guitar, an acoustic guitar, a keyboard, a clarinet, and a trumpet.
Oh, he's got a trumpet and a clarinet.
Yeah, well, I mean, and those were just hand-me-downs.
Okay.
He didn't really have any choice in those. But, I mean, all of them, he'll play them for, you know, a couple of weeks, and then he's, I'm over this, and he doesn't pick it up ever again.
Well, that's kids for you. I mean, Asher does that stuff all the time.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, their hobbies are so quick. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
I'm over that now.
So how old were you when you found out you were pregnant? Like, how did that change? Like, what did you think when you found out? Were you happy or just completely shocked? And
I think, I don't know how old I was. Goodness.
Well, and you don't have to answer that. That's fine.
I was like 25. So, I mean, I wasn't like young.
Okay.
I mean, I was old enough to know what was going on. I mean, I was scared and I was angry, I think. I mean, I was very angry to find out that I was going to have to be doing it alone. You know, it certainly wasn't anything that was planned, but you don't screw up a kid.
Yeah.
You know, they have to be number one. And so, you know, realizing that I was going to be doing it by myself was scary and it made me angry. I mean, I knew I could do it. Not to sound cocky, but I mean, I've always, if I wanted to do something, I could do it, period. I mean, I didn't always want to do good things, but if I wanted to get something done, then I was going to be able to get it done.
Yeah.
So I knew that it would be okay, but it was, you know, kind of like, well, this is different. I really never planned on having kids, honestly.
Okay.
My whole life, I really wanted to backpack through Europe, and I liked being able to travel and move and do whatever I wanted to do, you know, and with a kid, that's just the whole, you just can't do those things anymore. Now you're worried about school districts and getting homework done and, you know, making sure there's a stable environment, everything you need to do to try to make them good people.
Yeah.
You just aren't as important anymore once you have children, I think.
No, you're not. Yeah. I mean, but that's, it doesn't
that's
seem,
part of it.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like you've, you know, you have any, like, I've seen some parents that are bitter about that, but you don't seem like that. You seem very happy and proud, you know? And
well, absolutely. And, yeah. You know, I had definitely a lot of years of being selfish and having fun and mm-hmm. partying and going crazy that, I mean, I met that need.
Yeah.
I don't really need to meet it again. You know, I did it all.
Yeah.
I didn't get to do all the traveling and stuff I wanted to necessarily, but I mean, that can still happen. That's not off the table at some point down the road.
Yeah, sure.
How do you guys manage with three?
You know, I don't know. We've always kind of had the philosophy where they're just going to do what we do, I guess. And I don't know. We just do it, I guess. I don't know. We don't really think about it. I've never considered it, I guess. My family always took us when we traveled when I was a kid. So it was just a thing. When I was growing up, yeah. And I grew up in a big family. I mean, my mom's got three kids, so that was the smallest.
okay.
But, you know, I grew up very stereotypical Mexican, like, in a very small house with lots of people in it. So there's always just, you know, you didn't think about that stuff. You just did it because you had to. Like, you didn't have a choice. If you're going traveling, like, either everyone's coming or no one's going. So... And we always drove everywhere too. I think the first time I flew on a plane, I guess I was probably like 10 or 11 because my parents were divorced and my dad moved to Durango. So that was the very first time I'd been on a plane. And then, you know, so again, we just drove everywhere. Like that's just what we did. So it's just nothing to me. Like I always had everybody, all the kids were younger than me when I was a kid. So there's always a baby crying or somebody needing something or, you know, somebody throwing a temper tantrum. It wasn't, you know. So now when I look at those things, I'm just like, well, that's what they do. They cry. And when we first traveled with Brooks and Clara, they cried a lot. But they, I guess, I don't know. Kids are so adaptable. They acclimate to things so easily, I think. You know, if they, especially if they don't have a choice. Yeah. That they just, now they're pretty quiet.
Yeah. I just wonder about, you know, being outnumbered.
Yeah.
I mean, with me and him, I find myself a lot of times being overwhelmed and trying to figure out how to get everything done and do everything I need to for him. And so I look at people that have got multiple children and I think, oh my gosh, I don't know how they do it because my hands are full with one. I cannot imagine having more than that. And so when you see people with two kids, you think, well, two parents, two kids, one each.
Yeah.
But then when you see people with three kids, it's like, oh no, now they're outnumbered. I don't know how that's going to work out. But I mean, it happens all the time.
Sometimes I feel overwhelmed, for sure. Especially with Brooks. I mean, you've seen him. He's insane. He's into everything and running and screaming and, you know.
Brooks is awesome.
Oh, I love him. You know, he's the best. And he's really, you know, like the comedian of the family. And,
yeah,
you know, he loves everybody. But he's also,
I love that kid,
crazy strong and doesn't know his own strength. And so he gets into some trouble with the other two. And no, I mean, that's a valid point. You do feel overwhelmed at times. But at the same time, me and Robin kind of have this philosophy where, I don't know, they always come first. So you just don't really think about it. And you know what? I mean, I think you would be just fine with another one. You just have to be. Like, you don't have a choice anyway.
Well, I mean, if another one came, then I mean, yeah, you'd do what you have to do.
Yeah. And like you said, we're at an advantage. Anybody who's, you know, I was raised by a single mom and I saw what she had to go through. So anybody who has two parents around, you're automatically at an advantage. I mean, that's just reality. And, you know, not to be offensive to anybody else, you know, like I said, I was raised by a single mom, but you are at an advantage having a partner. And so we've always, you know, we've never taken that for granted. I don't. I mean,
well,
Robin,
I mean, even
you know,
TV teaches you there's supposed to be a good cop and a bad cop.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only one cop, and then it's like you got a split personality disorder.
Yeah, and we've had arguments about that, you know, one of us being the disciplinarian all the time. I mean, a lot of times it's Robin, because, you know me, I'm kind of easy.
Laissez-faire.
Yeah, the kids can talk me into anything sometimes, and Robin's like, "What are you doing?" Just like, I don't know, it's having fun, I guess.
but
no, you do feel overwhelmed. But I don't know. I thought I was done after one too. Honestly, I didn't think I was going to have another one after that, and I was pretty happy. And then, then we did, and then we had another one. So, you know, like, I don't know. I just always figure, you know, if you love your kids, if you really, truly love your kids, you'll put them first and you'll always figure it out. And that's me being easygoing again. But I just feel like love will make you do the right things. Hopefully.
Well, and I always go back to thinking, too, they're only little for such a short period of time.
Yeah.
And at some point, he's not going to want to be with me.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be pulling teeth to make him go on a vacation with me because he's not going to want to leave his friends.
Yeah.
Or to watch a movie with me or to play a board game. And so I try really hard when he asks me to do those things to stop what I'm doing and say, you know, the dishes are going to be there. I can get groceries later. Just do this.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't do it all the time. But I try really hard to make sure that I'm listening in those times and taking the time to do it. You know, I still lay with him in bed every night to put him to sleep. And a lot of people say, you know, he's too old. He shouldn't still be doing this. He still shouldn't be coming into your room sometimes, you know, to snuggle or whatever. And I'm like,
I disagree.
He's not going to want to do this forever.
Yeah, I
disagree. And if he wants
to
do it now, then I'm not going to kick him out, you know. I'm not doing that.
Well, and it's not like, I think people have that fear, like, oh, he's never going to grow up, or this is, you know, because people have told us the same things about our kids. And I agree with you. I think, no, he's going to grow up on his own, and he's never going to want to do this again. You know, like, why not just let them be kids? I remember you and I having this conversation, not this exact conversation, but when we were at the Boy Scout camp. Do you remember talking about that? And Elijah was, you know, I think, I don't know if this was the first time, but he was like running around, you know, wanted to be with other kids. And
yeah. He didn't want to do the camping stuff with me anymore.
Yeah, that really made me think a lot, you know, about that.
Well, you know, and it's, you know, and on the other hand, too, I'm constantly getting on him when he starts doing a baby voice or talking like a baby and doing things like that. But then I get upset when I look at him and I think, where's my baby? Where's my little boy? So I'm constantly telling him, grow up. You're not a baby. Don't talk like a baby. But then I'm getting upset at the same time when I see him trying to take charge and making decisions, saying, no, you have to talk to me about this. So we're constantly sending him these mixed signals too about grow up. No, don't grow up.
Well,
and I see that in my parenting that I'm going, ah, and I get mad when he gets, you know, does different things. It's like, but here on the other hand, I'm saying you need to do this for yourself. You are responsible for cleaning this up and you're, you know, you have these responsibilities. You're not a baby.
No, I think,
I mean, it's hard for them too.
I think there's a difference though between, you know, like sometimes I think, because Asher does this where he'll, you know, sit and pout and try to act like a kid or like a baby, you know, or whatever, you know, he'll pout, he'll cry or whatever. And I don't know. I see those as like manipulation tactics on their part. So.
No, probably.
Yeah. So.
But it's hard as a parent figuring out like where to draw that line. When is it okay? When is it not? And so then I try to think in his position too. It's hard for him to know. When is it okay and when is it not? You know?
Yeah. It
play
really
fighting,
is.
Stuff like that's the same thing. It's fun to play fight, but then you're in trouble if you play fight with a friend and they get hurt. Now I'm yelling at you. Well, you play fight with me all the time. Yeah, well, because I said so. You know, that's goes into the old because I said so statement. You can do it when I say you can, and that's it.
Does he talk back at all?
Yeah. He does, and he usually does it in a, like a kind of a condescending, not necessarily like being confrontational, but like that kind of underhand, you know, smart alecky type of thing. And then I got really mad at him about that the other day. And then again, like doing some self-reflection, I thought, I am the same way. When I'm really mad about things, I tend to be that way. You know, and he'll do something, I'll say, okay, good. Well, now you can never eat on the sofa again since you want to spill all over it. Of course, I'm not going to never let him eat on the sofa again.
Yeah.
You know, but like that's where I go when I get upset.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I get mad at him when he does the same thing. Well, yeah, I can't do this anymore. Well, okay, I'll just go move with Grandma Grandpa and then you never have to see me again and never worry about it. It's like, when I think I'm teaching him this, that's where he's getting this from, is how to make these kind of comments.
It's crazy how kids make you like reflect on yourself though. And
yeah,
improve.
Well, I mean, because everything he does, he's getting from me.
Yeah.
So if I want him to argue better, then I have to learn how to argue better.
Yeah.
You know, if I want to deal with problems, if I want him to be able to respond better to me, I have to learn how to respond better to him because he's picking everything up that I do.
Sure, yeah. And he's probably at that age where he's really starting to notice and recognize and be himself.
That's right. It's scary. It is scary being responsible for another human being.
Oh, yeah. People... But it's so much fun though. But maybe that's because
I mean,
I'm such
so many good times.
I'm such a big kid though. I don't know.
So, I mean, I love it. But I always hear that statement that says, you know, you're not just raising your son, you're raising someone's future husband and father. You know, keep that in mind with the things that you're doing, the things you're teaching them. So I try to make sure that I'm doing that. You know, there's always something you have to think about at all times.
Yeah. That's such a great way to look at things. 'Cause I think I've, you know, not really even thought of that either. You're raising someone's husband. I think that's a, I guess I've thought of it more with Clara, you know, having a daughter. Now I'm super hyper aware of how we raise the boys and how they, like, I'll even have them ask permission to, like, hug Claire. I know that's, like, extreme, but I want her to understand that people should be asking, you know, or people should be... And I want the boys to recognize that they need to respect people and women and men even, too, and stuff. So, yeah, I didn't really think about that with the boys at all, you know, at all. I guess maybe just being a guy, but Robin always told me, I've always thought about this stuff. I'm like, wow, I'm an idiot.
Well, and I remember when I knew I was having a boy, how happy I was and how relieved, because I thought there's no way I could do a girl. I mean, there's just no way. And I thought boys are going to be so much easier, but they're not really, you know, there's still a lot that you have to be able to teach them so they become good people. It doesn't really matter what sex they are. They're still people.
Yeah.
They still have to learn common decency and courtesy and, you know, all that good stuff.
Yeah. Well, I think you've done a great job. I mean, you have a good kid and, you know, Elijah's he's a nice, polite kid and he's super mature. So
he's a sweet boy.
He is. He really is.
Very proud of him.
That's nice. I'm sure he would love to hear
that.
And
your kids are awesome, too.
Oh, thanks. Not that I'm fishing for compliments, but thanks.
We don't see them nearly enough, but
yeah,
it's been adorable children, too.
It's been a long summer of dealing with everything, so yeah.
Yeah.
It sucks, but...
It's hard. Years go by. It's like days just keep getting fuller and fuller.
Yeah. Do you, would you say you're a person that has any regrets or anything about life, or do you like how things turned out?
Oh, I like how things turned out. I don't have any regrets.
Yeah.
I try not to ever do that because, you know, everything that's happened and every decision I've made has shaped where I am now.
Yeah.
You know. Like that. Do I wish I wouldn't have had to do everything by myself? Well, absolutely. But if anyone else had been my partner at the time, then it wouldn't be Elijah. Yeah. So, you know, I certainly wouldn't trade him in for anything.
Yeah.
Everything happens for a reason, I think. So I'm very grateful for where I am today and what I've accomplished and all the support and friends and family that I've met along the way. Definitely never thought I would be in a small town in North Carolina, but here I am and it's going well. So
I agree with you. I didn't think that either growing up, but I like it here.
Yeah, I do too. I'm accustomed now. Mm-hmm. I thought for a long time, there's no way I'm going to stay in this town. There's no way. But I mean, at this point, we've got the house, we're close to the beach, we've got the mountains. I think, I don't want for anything. We're doing just fine.
Yeah. And it's what a great place to like raise your family too.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah.
Yep.
I mean, at the end
very
of the day,
happy here.
At the end of the day, you've got control over your kids. You know, you don't have to agree or disagree with anything anywhere you live, you know, anywhere.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's such a nice, quiet place to raise your kids. I enjoy myself here. And, you know, we met you and you're probably one of our first friends that like we really started hanging out with and things like that. So, so that's always, that'll always mean a lot to us, you know, as far as living here.
Yeah. We love you guys.
Oh, we feel the same way.
It'd be fun if we could get together more.
I know.
We'll have to make it a priority.
Yeah, we definitely will because it's been a while. I know Asher definitely misses Elijah and Robin misses her Liz time. So,
aww.
We'll have to get together though, or at least you guys.
Absolutely.
I know Robin would love a girl's night or a girl's day or night or whatever, so she doesn't get to do that often. I feel like me and Robin are
that'd be fun.
Attached at the hip. Poor Robin.
Well, you know, if one of you guys took off, then that would be three with one person. Again, I mean, that's rough.
I'll take off. I'll be the one taking off. Bye, Robin. Have fun. don't call me if you need help. Poor Robin. She'd hate me forever. She, you know what, though? I think she could handle it. Like, she does, you know, I don't know. She's like me. She's just real laid back. So she does well with kids. I think she'd be totally fine. She'd hate me, but she'd be fine. She would be good.
So we have sleepovers over here sometimes, and there'll be like three of them.
Yeah.
We've done that on a few occasions. But I'm kind of one of those parents. I'm just like, okay, I'm going to be in the other room. You guys have a good time.
I'm probably like that.
Don't
I'm
break
like,
anything.
Bye.
Don't kill each other. And that's all. If I hear tears, then I'll probably have to come in, but that's it.
Yeah. I can relate to that. It's so different when it's someone else's kids, though. Like, all you can do is hope that they're good. Like, you can't discipline them or anything. You can tell them to stop, but you can't, like, you're not going to ground them, you know?
And we've been very lucky. Most of the kids who've been over here have been very well behaved.
Yeah.
You know, and listen quickly, there's been one kid who was just awful. And I made it very clear to Elijah that kid would never come over to our house again.
Oh, yeah. We've been lucky, too.
I said,
don't think...
if somebody doesn't listen to me, then I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, you shouldn't have to. I think we've been lucky, too,
well,
though.
Exactly.
We haven't run into any kids like that. Not yet.
Yeah.
But, it's really hard to... I don't know. Sometimes it's easier when it's yours. I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can scare them sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
Into behaving.
You can be a whole...
take something away.
Whole different person.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yep.
Well, let's see. I've only got a couple things left. I won't keep you on here too long. I know I can talk forever and ever and ever and ever. So, what would you say now... like excites you about your life? What's your passion now?
I mean, I think it's my, as looking to the future, I guess, traveling is still my big thing. There's so many places to go, and I've always looked so far out, you know, oh, I want to go to Greece and I want to do this and I want to do that. But with a kid, that's just nearly impossible because you have to fly, and I can't afford to fly us to do those things.
It's so expensive, yeah.
But I've been doing so much more research on different places you can go here and camping, you know, and we've got all of this camping equipment. I just got a whole bunch of new stuff for Christmas, like an even bigger tent and a grill and all this other stuff to where we can maybe go out to Wyoming or Nevada, the mountains around here, to where we can plan out these trips and make these, you know, awesome family memories and teach him about all the fun stuff there is to do besides sitting on, you know, an electronic all day.
Yeah.
And I love that about him, that he wants to be outside and he likes doing those things. And I want to encourage that as much as I can. And, you know, again, take these trips while he still wants to. And so that's my big thing now.
Yeah. What would you say, your biggest fear is?
I mean, honestly, probably that something will happen to me.
Yeah.
Maybe that's kind of morbid.
No.
But, like, what will happen to him if, you know, God forbid anything should ever happen to me, if I'm in a car accident or, you know, something crazy like that happens and I'm gone, what will become of him?
Yeah.
And so that's probably my biggest fear.
I think that's a pretty good one. Like, yeah, that's a pretty good one.
Maybe a little extreme, but I mean, I don't worry about much. I try not to. Again, I think everything happens for a reason, and I have a lot of trust that if anything ever does happen, that it's meant to happen, and there's nothing that I could really do to prevent it.
Yeah.
So I try not to get worried. You know, that's just not part of my personality.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's still that lingering in the back of your head whenever you're, you know, if I'm going out at 3 a.m. on call or something like that. Well, what if something happens while I'm out here down this dark dirt road all by myself at 3 o'clock in the morning?
Do you think that, because me and Robin have had this conversation, do you think that that's because you're a woman? And I don't mean to make this about, you know, women or men, but she was telling me like how scary the world is when you're a woman and, you know, the things you think about, like, you know, I don't think about that as a guy at all until now that I have a daughter. Do you think that's something that affects you?
I mean, it doesn't really affect me. Again, I kind of missed out on that, self-preservation gene or something.
Okay. Okay.
You know, I, even from a young age, I always put myself in very precarious situations, just with no regard. Yeah. And I've just been very lucky. Nothing terrible has ever happened to me. I've certainly been in plenty of situations for something terrible to happen, but it all goes back to that. I don't know if it's faith or what it is that, you know, I'm going to be okay unless I'm not meant to be okay. And then I'm not going to be, and there's nothing I can do about it one way or another.
Yeah. Maybe that's the thing with me is I was in the same kind of situations when I was a kid. So maybe that's why I'm just like, oh, well.
Yeah. I always had a lot of fear for Elijah when he was little.
Yeah.
And that's kind of gone away now as he's gotten older. But there was a lot of years that I was scared a lot for him. I don't know, from just stuff I heard on TV or everybody was talking about these people that stole children and did these terrible things to him. And I can remember just being petrified. And, you know, he always had to hold my hand and stay within my sight. And, you know, which is, I think, normal parenting. You shouldn't let a four-year-old run around a store.
Sure.
But, you know, just super scared that, like, God, if somebody grabs him or, you know, having to always make him go into the women's bathroom, you know, like still to this day, I'm not comfortable sending him into the boys' bathroom, but now he's too big. He doesn't want to go in the girls' bathroom. So then I'm just standing outside the men's bathroom, listening to make sure like nothing happens to him. But I mean, I think that's probably just parenthood in general. Do you have, well, cause you can go into the bathroom with the boys. So
yeah,
definitely anything you have to worry about.
And I do still, you know, even,
yeah.
But yeah, like I have that luxury, like Robin can just, you know, and we've talked about that. Do we still let him go with Robin? And we're like, no, he's way too old now. And so, but
Now they've got like rules, like at the pool, if a kid's older than like five, they're not allowed to go into the women's locker room. They have to go in the men's.
Yeah. And I think that's probably like a good idea. I mean,
well, and it is a good idea because, you know, he's got girls that are on like the swim team with him that he knows from school. They shouldn't be seeing each other naked. They're too old for that at this point.
Yeah.
But it doesn't change the fact that now he's in a men's locker room with a bunch of men I don't know getting naked.
Yeah. Who's yeah, exactly.
Scared the heck out of me.
Exactly. Who he's getting naked in front of and they're naked in front of him. And yeah, that's,
yeah, it's that, like, I mean, I don't know what's going on in his head, because I'm not a boy. I mean, I don't know, maybe they don't even notice that kind of stuff, but you know, it still freaks me out.
Yeah. I think that's something like that's odd to me that people don't really think about that stuff. It's like they don't,
well, I think they always think about it with girls, but they don't think about it happening to boys. But you hear about it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The Boy Scout leaders and sports leaders and, you know, the people in the church. And it's, I mean, that to me is terrifying.
Yeah.
Not to say that it would be any worse for it to happen to a girl, but I mean, I cannot imagine.
Yeah.
I don't know what I would do. I think I'd go buck wild and murder everyone. I can't even.
Yeah. No. Yeah. It's that stuff terrifies me too. Like just thinking about them being alone with somebody else in charge that I don't know or trust, that stuff like really freaks me out. And I think parents or people, or I don't know, just society in general, like they don't consider single parents in those kinds of situations, and that I think is crazy. Because I remember as a kid my mom freaking out about stuff like that, like wanting me to have somebody with us at the pool so I can go into the, you know, locker room with them or things like that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember really ever going into a man's locker room at like a public pool until I was, until I was old enough to stay home alone, I guess, you know, or whatever. But yeah, yeah. She always freaked out about that. Yeah. She always freaked out about that.
Well, and nowadays, nowadays there is a lot of places that have like a family restroom, you know, airports and things like that, where there's a lot of strangers. And so you might wait 20 minutes to use that family bathroom, but we're waiting. Yeah. We are waiting and we're going in there.
And do you ever think about this? So I've been staying home alone since I was probably like 10 or 9. Like, I would never let Asher stay home alone. He's almost 9 years old. Like, would you let Elijah stay home by himself already? Or, like...
I would not, because I know he makes bad decisions.
Okay.
You know, I can... I mean, he just does not always use his head. He thinks something will be fun, and he'll just do it. And then I catch him in the ass, and I'm going, what are you doing? You are not allowed to use the microwave with that metal spoon. You know what I mean? Like, you can tell him a million times. He's like, yes, but we have decided we're going to melt down all of our candy in the microwave and on the stove. And I'm going, absolutely not. Get out of my kitchen. You're never allowed in my kitchen ever again. And there goes my irrational my irrational anger.
Ever.
You're never allowed to set foot in my kitchen for the rest of your life. And so it's more of those kind of things that, I mean, I don't think he would leave or do anything like that, but I think inadvertently he could definitely do some damage.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's definitely not there yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I like, I don't know when you figured that out, you know, we're still kind of wondering what.
Yeah. And I don't know either. And somebody told me that according to like the fire department, and I don't know if this is true or not, if a child has like the sense to get out of the house, if it's on fire, then they are allowed to be left alone.
That's crazy.
And then that's like the deciding rule. So if you leave, you know, a 2-year-old in the home by itself and there's a fire, then you would be held responsible, you know, for child endangerment. But if they were 7 or whatever, and that happened, then you wouldn't be in any trouble because they have the knowledge and capacity to get out of the house if there's an accident.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that. I think that'd be tough for me to be like, hey, we're going to leave. If there's a fire, run the opposite direction. Bye.
Well, I mean, we've done fire drills in the house.
Okay.
I had to send something home from school one day. And so I taught Elijah, like, okay, you know, this is what you're going to watch for. You know, if you're in your bedroom and you see that there's like smoke under the door, or you're going to put your hand in front of the doorknob if it feels hot, you know, I showed him how to jump out his window and how to pop out the screen and how to do all this stuff. Cause it's a 1-story house. It's not high. You know, and I had him actually try it. I said, you're going to jump out the window and you're going to run across the street right here. And this is where you're going to wait for me.
Okay.
And I taught him all that. Yeah. So then of course, after that, there was like 6 different occasions where he had a friend over and they decided to jump out the window without my knowledge.
Oh.
So, you know, you teach some things and it backfires.
No, but I think they look back.
Then that was a fun new game. Hey, let's pop off the screen and jump out the window.
Oh,
but
man.
But I mean, now I know though, for sure, he knows what to do in the event of an emergency.
Exactly. Yeah. He's just practicing. I mean.
Yeah. So he definitely knows how to do it.
Really? I mean, he's teaching a friend. So he's doing a service.
And teaching a friend who maybe is on the 3rd story of his house and is going to go home and try to pop out the
hopefully that kid,
his 3rd story window.
But you know what? The fire department says you should have sense by that age. So if your friend is jumping out the 3rd story, they should know better. So
that's their fault.
Exactly.
Not mine.
Exactly. Elijah's providing
a community
service.
Let your kids
come
to my house at their own risk.
we'll put that in a disclaimer at the beginning of the episode.
No children were harmed in the making of this podcast.
Exactly. Not a single one. If they're harmed, it's their fault. On their own.
That's right.
Yeah. So I don't know if you want to talk about this, but how's Elijah dealing with the whole boyfriend thing? I mean, is he pretty... excited or, and he's, I can cut all this out if you don't want to talk about it.
No, it's fine. He's super excited about it to the point that, I mean, it's had me a little uncomfortable and nervous. Like the second time he met him, he started calling him dad.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which was just kind of like, oh, that's weird. You know, don't do that.
So, and he's
Kevin
attached.
Was awesome about it. He's just like, it's fine. I don't care. You know, whatever. But he's just like, oh, are you guys getting married? Blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, bud, you know, this is just starting, you know, and I like him. But I mean, that would be years down the road. It's not anything that's happening right now. But, you know, I went through a situation where I did not introduce someone I had dated for a while to my kid, thinking that that would be the better option. And then they met, and Elijah hated the guy.
Oh, really?
And okay. I mean, we just, yeah, we couldn't get past it. He hated him, and he made it very clear. He told me on several occasions that he didn't like him.
Huh.
And he didn't want me to date him. And I thought maybe this is just him being weird. But no, he legitimately did not like the guy. But it was very different with Kevin. But Kevin also brought him like a huge monster truck, like remote control truck, the first time he met him. So I think that definitely won him over from the first meeting.
That's not a bad idea at all.
So I think that definitely helped him along.
He's all like, Dad.
It's like, I can get used to this. This is a good deal.
Yeah.
But after that situation, I decided to... decided that it would be the best idea if I think something is going to go somewhere to go ahead and let them see how they do together.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear.
I mean, it's been really good. Yeah. They get along really well.
I'm glad to hear that. So, I know he like really wants that. It seems like,
Oh, of course. I mean, and what kid doesn't?
Yeah, I really
did,
too.
Especially a boy.
Yeah.
You know, he wants that. You know, and I really honestly thought that I would have already found someone and been married years ago. That, you know, that was kind of my plan. I thought I'm going to meet somebody great, you know, when he's still a baby, and we're going to get married, and he'll adopt him, and he'll never even know the difference. You know, of course, that ship has sailed at 8 years old. But, you know, again, if it's meant to be, it will be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to try not to worry about it too much. Put myself out there a little bit every now and again and see if anything turns up. So, it's kind of, you know, I do fine on my own. I certainly don't need someone in my life, but it would be nice.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, you get a lot pickier when you have kids, you know? It's harder
to... Oh, definitely.
Yeah. You have to be. You really have to be that.
Yeah.
Like, that person, and I don't know if this sounds terrible, but they're not going to love your kids the same, especially in the beginning, as you do. You know, they're not, you know, they don't have that same, like, attachment, you know, until they do. So it's...
Well, and so many people, honestly, don't want to date someone with children because they want to date and they want someone they can go out with, you know, several nights a week. And it's like, when you're a parent, I can't go out several nights a week. I've got a kid, you know, for one, I can't afford to get a babysitter several nights a week. For two, you know, we've got homework and we've got sports and we've got the need for family time, just the two of us to do things. You know, that's just not realistic when you're a parent that you can have, you know, three date nights a week. Nobody can do that.
You need
you know, if you're single, making good money, you know, if I wasn't having to pay the extra bills I pay for having a child who eats like a horse, then I'd have plenty of money. Go out whenever I wanted.
Well, you need someone like really mature.
Part of being a parent means you have to feed them.
Yeah.
So
it takes a lot of maturity on a partner's part to be able to, like, not deal with it, but to accept it, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you need someone really mature. Like, it's, so it sounds like Kevin is, you know, is that guy right now anyway. So I'm, you know.
Yeah, things are going good. We'll see what happens. Take it one day at a time.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad Elijah likes him. That's awesome. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I warned him ahead of time. I was like, so he really hated the last guy I dated. And I think that made him really nervous. but Toy definitely put him on the book, so I think he's in the clear now.
Oh, good. That's good to hear. I'm glad I'm sure that's a relief for him. That must have been nerve-wracking.
Sure. Have your fate decided on by an 8-year-old, whether or not the 8-year-old's going to like you. That would be scary, I'm sure.
Hey, that's the way you got to do it, though, you know? I totally,
that's right.
Yeah.
No. Package deal.
That's right. No, I totally understand. But thank you so much for doing this, Liz. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for asking me.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm flattered. Well, I hope it turns out okay.
No, I think it's great.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it's kind of the point, you know, like getting to know people. And I think you were great. I definitely learned a lot about you. So yeah, I'm glad you did it. Now you know about podcasts. So
now I do. Very exciting.
But yeah, thank you very much.
I have to get Elijah on one here pretty soon.
I think so.
If I could figure out how to do one, then I'd stick him on one, but I'll have to just ship him over to your house so you guys can do one with him.
I think he'd have a blast, and we've got an extra microphone, so.
Oh, they would have fun with that.
Yeah. Oh, Asher would love it. He'd have such a great time. And Elijah's like got such a big personality. I think that'd be fun. So yeah, we'll have to do that. But yeah, I won't keep you on here too much longer. Or at all, I guess. I guess I've already had you for an hour and a half. So
it was good.
Yeah, thank you.